Thank you very much, Jan, and good evening to all of you. Today's topic is Upanishads. Upanishads, how many of you have read or studied Upanishads, if I may ask? Okay, very few people. Okay. Upanishads, they are part of Vedas. And I'm sure you have all heard the name Veda. And I brought one Vedic book. I mean, you can see how big it is. This is just one of them. Thousands and thousands of verses in it. And Upanishad is part of this. Long time ago, from Afghanistan, crossing the northwest frontier borders, crossing the Himalayas into Punjab, towards the Ganges, these Aryans, they settled over there. Nobody knows how long ago. They saw the beauty of the mountains. They saw the beautiful climate, lot of natural resources. They lived in a very communal way. They did not sit idle. So in their leisure time, they looked at that beauty and they started writing in poetry. And that is the first part of the Vedas. In Sanskrit, it's called mantras. It's like a beauty of this nature. As they grew a little bit in their intelligence, they started seeing the divinity in that beauty. That's where the river god, the rain god, the forest god, the wind god, all those terms emerged because they felt the divinity behind the beauty. As they grew more into their intellectual pursuits, they wanted to experience that too. Not just only write it, not just sing it, but experience it too. So the first level, those were the poets. They came up with the mantras. Then the second level, they were priests, because they saw divinity in it, and they started singing because they were looking at the god in them. And that is called the Brahmans and the Upasanas. See, Brahmans, they are two categories. One is called the Karmakanda, the ritualistic portion, and that's where all the fire ceremonies emerge from. And then the Upasanas, they wanted to meditate on that too. So those were like priests. So first the poets, then the priests, then the finally, when they wanted to experience that divinity also, when the intellect really emerged to that height, that's when the Upanishads came. So each Veda, there are four Vedas, as you have it in the handout, four Vedas. The Rig Veda, the Sam Veda, the Yajur Veda, and the Atharva Veda. So this is the Rig Veda, the very first one, the oldest one, which I just mentioned. I did not bring all four of them, just I thought one, I should show it to you. Okay? I mean, you can take a look at it afterwards, that how this Sanskrit is written also. So Upanishads, that is the topic today. Upanishad is also a Sanskrit word. And most of the Sanskrit words, they are compound words. Upanishad. Up means near. Shat means sitting. Ni means every which way. What does it mean? That means that those intellectual people, they had to go to a guru, to a person who knew more than them, sit near them, not just physically, but mentally and intellectually also, and near them. That means there has to be closeness. That means they had to spend a lot of time with them too. Ask questions, get the answers, and finally experience. They say there were about 1180 branches of the Vedic tradition. And each Vedic tradition had the Upanishads associated with it. But as the time went on, most of the Upanishads got lost. Today there are about 108 Upanishads have been surfaced. And out of 108, about 11 of them have been, people have given the commentaries or they have been translated into English. And those are the Upanishads, the names I have on this handout for you. So all those Upanishads, they are part of these Vedas. Some belong to Rig Veda, some belong to Yajur Veda, some to Sam Veda, and some to Atharva Veda. These Upanishads are not very long, but they are very deep. So that's why they need to be studied under a different kind of a sitting. And before we study them, if our mind is churning, if there's no integration in our mind, see, just like the ancient times, the poets and the priests and then the philosophers. So those are called the philosophers. So they had to reach to that level. See, just like if you want to see something, whether with a telescope or a microscope, we have to make some adjustment. The same way this mind and intellect equipment has to be fully adjusted. And how do we adjust it? These rishis, they said adjust it with any path. Whether it's a path of devotion, which is a bhakti mark, whether it's a path of jnana yoga, or it could be a path of karma yoga. See, those are the paths which really adjust your mind and intellect equipment. It's a full integration of the personality. And if you ever get a chance to study Upanishad, you will see that right in the beginning, the students and the guru, they sing that. They say, God, help us to keep this mind and intellect fully integrated so that we can absorb this knowledge. How many of you practice yoga here? Okay. I'm sure when you practice yoga, you do pranayama. You might have learned different terminology. Anumekosh, manomekosh, pranumekosh. All that terminology has come from Upanishads. The pranayama itself from the Upanishad. Understanding what this body is, understanding what this mind is, all that knowledge has come from the Upanishads. See, today I'm just giving you just an overview of the Upanishads. We are not going into the depth of any Upanishad because it takes time and different kind of a setting also. At the ashram, we do study Upanishads. See, according to these rishis, this physical body, the gross body we can call it, or a sathul sharir we can call it, it has only a certain lifespan. No matter how much we take care of it, it will last maybe 100 years, 125 years. Ultimately, it will disintegrate. But there is something within this body, which we call mind, intellect, ego, or the deeper part of the mind, which is called chit, that does not disintegrate. Even though it has come from the nature, but it does not disintegrate, it just have a longer lifespan. But then there is something within that, which is called soul. that is eternal. So this is the kind of rishis they talked about. They learned it from the guru, and then they finally experienced it. It's not just theoretical learning, ultimately experiencing it also. According to these Upanishads, there are three things in this entire universe. One is called God. You can call it by any other name, kind of Brahm, supreme energy, supreme reality, does not matter. Those are the names we have given. See, sometimes we think our language can define everything. But no, language falls short. So that's why sometimes we have to use too many words. So God, then there's a soul, which does not perish when the body perishes. God, soul. And according to the Upanishads, the soul is part of God. Just a speck of this completeness. And this complete does not become small when souls come out. This complete is still a complete. It's infinite. But then there's another thing which is part of God. That is called Prakriti or nature. I will write it in English, nature. So these are the only three things in this entire universe. Whether it's say in the form of a tree, in the form of a bug, in the form of a human being. Only these three things. The Prakriti part is this body, this mind, intellect, ego, and the deeper part of mind. That is the Prakriti, the nature. This is also eternal. This is eternal. This is eternal. But this changes, and these two, they do not change. That is the difference. So our personality is made up of this. So that's what we know theoretically, but when we meditate, when we sit near the feet of Guru, we experience it. Sometimes the vibrations from a Guru, or sometimes the techniques Guru teach us or give us. Sometimes people question that why the souls are increasing. Why do we see increase in the population? This human mind cannot understand that souls are everywhere, infinite number of souls. We cannot count them. If you see just a population growing from 1 billion to 2 billion, that's nothing. And population, human population only, we are looking at it. How about rest of the creation? So this is what we need to understand. We identify ourselves with the nature part. And even in the nature part, something in the nature which really deludes us, that is our mind. The thoughts. Average person does not have a control over the thoughts. We think that thoughts, they have been created by somebody else, even though those are our thoughts, because we don't like to take responsibility of our thoughts. We know that thoughts, they change into feelings. Sometimes we feel low, sometimes we feel great. Feelings, they eventually change into attitude. Attitude changes into action. The kind of attitude I have, that's the action I'll do. And actions, they ultimately make our personality. And personality makes our destiny. And this is all part of the nature. That is not part of the soul, who we are. And we get lost into just this drama of this life. The truth from the Upanishads just take us to that level where we can just see it more clearly. We learn how to calm this mind. Because this knowledge, this wisdom helps us to see with a broader lens. We take responsibility for our actions. We understand who we are, because ultimately that's what we need to do. See, there are several goals of life we have. These rishis, they said goals of life, they keep on changing. And we have seen it in our own lifetime. When we were younger, our goals were different. Now we are older, goals are different. Goals are very gross. We can see the goals. We can talk about the goals. We can discuss the goals. But there is something which is beyond goals. Purpose. That is very subtle. And Upanishad teach us or show us what the purpose of life is. That's why that mind and the intellect integration is needed to study the Upanishads. A chaotic mind, a negative mind, cannot understand Upanishads, because those teachings are very deep, very esoteric. Some of those teachings are in a very symbolic way. You look at it, you say, what are they talking about? It does not apply to me. But when you look deeply into it, it does. It does. See, these thoughts of ours, so many thoughts we have all day long. They say any given minute, we have about 25 to 30 thoughts. And in a day, we have about 60,000 thoughts. And most of those thoughts are negative thoughts. If we just improve them a little bit, they become little unnecessary thoughts. Right? Then they become necessary thoughts, then positive thoughts, then divine thoughts. So if we have the divine thoughts in our mind, only then this mind and intellect is integrated. Only then we can understand the Upanishad. See, that's why most of the people, they really don't study them. Or if they study them, they get bored with them. But there's a wealth of knowledge in the Upanishads. That's why we study them at the ashram, or I encourage people to just make sure that every day do study them. They change you. They bring a different kind of a peace in your personality. Outside, no matter what is happening, you have only a certain amount of control. But this is all inner work we do. When we study, when we try to experience the Upanishadic knowledge. See, this mind which I was trying to tell you, any time we do any action, there is an impression on our mind, good or bad, whether we like it or not. Even coming over here today, this is the action of coming over here. Either you will like it or you don't like it. That will leave an impression on the mind. And more you do it, the deeper the impression. And all day long, we do so many things and so many impressions. So that's why this mind is very hard to control. But once we understand that, no, this is my mind, I need to control it, and with the help of this mind, I can know who I am. At the end of that handout, see, first there are four Vedas, the names Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved, and Atharv Ved. Then there are about 11 Upanishads. These are the Upanishads which have been translated, and commentary has been written on these. You can find them, even you can Google them and find some information about them. Then there are four great sayings from the Upanishads. And these are called Maha Vakyas. Vakya means saying, Maha means great. The first Mahavakya, Pragya Naam Brahm. A disciple goes to a guru, fully integrated disciple, ready to learn, ready to experience, goes to a guru, asks a question. What is this Brahm? What is this God? The guru says, consciousness is Brahm. Consciousness. So that means this soul is part of Brahm, the God. It's no different. And we all are that soul. See, we identify ourselves with this part, but the guru says, no, you are this. And that's where we are all same. So this is a great saying. There's a lot of depth of wisdom and the knowledge in this small saying. Pragya Naam Brahm. Then he stays with the guru a little bit more. Guru says, you are that. Tat Tvam Asi. You are Brahm. You are that. Because sometimes we think that God we need to find somewhere else. It is way beyond. We need to go somewhere. He says, no, you are that. It's right inside you. You've been looking everywhere else, but I'm telling you, it's right there, inside you. Then he tells him, to go somewhere, do a little contemplation, do meditation. So this disciple goes into a solitude place, contemplates on that. Then he experiences it. That's when he says, I am Atma Brahm. This self is Brahm. He recognizes this. So first he has to go to a guru, spend some time, do some service, show some humility, faith, surrender, all those qualities. Then a guru teaches. Then he goes into the solitude, spends some time at the inner layers of the personality, then experiences. That's where that experience comes. And then he comes back to the master. That's where that fourth line is. He comes and he shouts, he just with such a peaceful shout, he says, Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahm. So it did not happen right away. See, sometimes we read it, we say, okay, all right, I am Brahm. So I'm going to sit down and keep on saying, I'm Brahm, I'm Brahm, I'm Brahm. It doesn't happen that way. You have to go through. So these Upanishads, they teach us that you have to go through these steps. When we have a guru or we go to a guru, it's not for the guru we go. Guru is for our help, not the other way around. So these are like four stages. And all these great sayings, these four great sayings, these are from four different Vedas. But in the Upanishadic portion of the Vedas, not in the mantra portion, not in the Brahman portion, not in these ritualistic portions, but in the Upanishadic portion. That's where these sayings are mentioned so that you can experience it. You might have heard about Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is also an Upanishad actually. At the end of each chapter, it's mentioned Upanishad. Why it's Upanishad? Because again, Arjun and Krishna, Guru and the disciple. Disciple is asking, Guru is telling. And at the end, Arjun experienced it too. Not only Arjun experienced, the Sanjay, who was watching it with his yogic power, he saw that too. What did they see? The cosmic form of God. So that is the experience. And that is the experience this Upanishad keep on telling us that we need to experience. So not only the theory of it, but really the practicality of it. Some of the questions these disciples, they ask in some of these Upanishads. What is a dream? What happens to the soul when we dream? Or when we sleep? Or when we deeply sleep? So the gurus, they answer those kind of questions. This one of the Upanishad, the guru says, there are different levels of our consciousness. Awake consciousness, when we are fully awake, our senses, they are working. Then we sleep in the dream, our body is sleeping, but our mind is still working. Then there's a third level of consciousness, when we are deeply sleeping. Body is resting and mind is resting too. That is a deep sleep. That's a different level of consciousness. But in all these three levels of consciousness, what is always awake? This part never sleeps. Okay? So in the nature part, certain levels of our personality, body is awake, body sleeps. Mind is awake, mind sleeps also. Intellect, sometimes it's working, sometimes it doesn't work. But this soul, the Atma, it never sleeps. So these three levels, awake, dream, and deep sleep. Then there's a fourth level of consciousness, which is called Turiya. That's a samadhi. That's a deep meditation. When meditation takes us to that level where we are fully united with that God, the Supremehood, that's called Turiya. And at that time, of course, soul is awake. So soul never ever sleeps. So these are the questions which get answered. The questions will come into our mind also. But these questions come to our mind when we are a little peaceful. Because average person is agitated, have negative thoughts, unnecessary thoughts in the mind, and does not pay much attention to these deeper questions of life. Why are we here? What is the purpose of life? Is it just to live longer? Is it just to have a beautiful body? Just enjoy this nature? Time comes, then you ask those questions a little deeply. And those questions were being asked by those disciples. And the gurus' answers, questions as well answers, they are given in there. In a very symbolic way, or sometimes very direct way also. In a Katha Upanishad, there is a young man, 9 years old. So you have a Katha Upanishad's name over here too. Katha, K-A-T-H-A. This is number 3. Katha Upanishad. There's a young man, 9 years old. He's a son of this rich man. Rich man gets old. And he says, I have reached this ripe age. I need to detach myself from these worldly possessions. So what does he do? He has a big fire ceremony. That is one of the, that's a ritual part okay, the second portion, the priestly portion of the Vedas. He performs that. And after doing that, he says, I am going to give away a lot of my possessions. Back then, the possessions used to be the cows, the horses. So he looks at all that. Even at that stage, he doesn't want to give away the healthy cows and the horses. He keeps the healthy ones and gives away all the barren cows, the old horses. This young man, young boy, 9 years old, his name is Nachiketa. He looks at it. He's a very wise 9 years old. And he says, Father, you are giving all this away. I belong to you also. Whom you are giving it to? Where will I go? First, father does not pay any attention to that. Then he bothers him again. Just like we'll tell our children, if they bother us, then let's go away. Or some people might say, when they get very aggravated, go to hell. So that's what this rich man said. He said, I'm going to give you to death. So he takes it seriously. This story is in this Katha Upanishad. So he says, my father wants me to go to the Lord of Death. I am going there anyway. So the way the story goes, he goes there, waits for the Lord of Death, and the Lord of Death says, this Brahman has come over here. He waited for 3 days and three nights for me. I better give him some boon. So he asks for the boon. So he says, this little young man says, just answer my questions. So he asks him questions. What is this life? What happens after life, human life? What is death? What really dies? How do we get this immortality? So these are the questions. And in that Upanishad, symbolically, he mentions, this guru, that this body is like a chariot. And it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita also. Body is like a chariot. The senses in this body, they are like horses. The reins which are attached to the horses, it's like a mind. And the person who's driving the chariot is our intellect. And the person who is sitting in the back of the chariot, the owner, is the soul. So this analogy makes it very clear for us what this whole personality is. These senses, like the horses, would like to go outside. They do get tempted. Eyes want to see beautiful scenes. Ears want to hear beautiful music. But then these senses, they should be under the control of the mind. So our mind should be alert. But then the mind should be under the control of the higher mind, which is called intellect. My eyes, if they want to see something, is it good for me or not? Is it beneficial for me or not? So the intellect part is the one which decides. So with this beautiful example, this symbolism in the Upanishads, they just tell us that if the intellect is not sleeping, if the charioteer is not sleeping, it's fully alert, can control the horses better, and the owner of that chariot, which is the soul, will enjoy the life, the whole ride. And that's what this life is all about. It's not that we should not enjoy. We should definitely enjoy, but use the discrimination also. Whatever I'm doing, if I'm going somewhere, having something, talking to somebody, is it helping me to attain that goal? Or is it diverting me from that goal where I'm going? So these are some of the questions like this are answered in these Upanishads. Then they talk about the meditation also. Why should we meditate? When should we meditate? How should we meditate? What really happens when we meditate? How do we attain that samadhi level, the superabsorption? Because meditation is also a big thing these days. A lot of people are meditating. How many of you are meditating regularly? Very good. Yes, that's why you are here in this class. Because when we start meditating, we want to know more. Okay? Just like in Bhagavad Gita also, there's a whole chapter on meditation alone. The same way in the other Upanishads also. We find a lot of information about meditation. And then about this body, different yogis, different rishis, they just dissected it a little differently according to their students at that time. Because these Vedas and the Upanishads, they were not written in just a few years. Thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Generation after generation. And it was not even written actually. It was orally submitted. The students, they had to memorize them. They'll go to the guru, learn it, and then memorize it. But a few thousand years ago, great rishi by the name of Ved Vyas, I'm sure you have heard his name, Ved Vyas, he is the one who compiled them together in a very systematic way. He just put them together, and he is the one who made these four books. In fact, most of the mantras over here, you don't even know which seer, which sage, which rishi, which yogi wrote those. No authorship. In Sanskrit, these Vedas are called Shrutis. Shruti. Shruti means something which is heard. Shruti. Something which is heard. How did they hear it? During samadhi. That's why they did not put their names on it. Even these Upanishads also. Most of the Upanishadic truths, we don't know which rishi wrote it. Here and there, there's a mention, because if it's mentioned that certain ashram, so from that ashram we know that who was running that ashram, so some other reference from that we can find out Shruti. See, there's another term in Sanskrit which is called Samriti. Shruti means heard directly. Samriti means you remembered it and told it. So it's just like if you are hearing it from me directly, it's a Shruti. When you go out and explain it to somebody else, what did you hear, that will be Samriti. So that's why all these Vedas, they are called Shrutis. Or another name for it is primary scriptures. Because in the Hindu culture, there are a lot of books. It's a vast ocean of knowledge there. But everything has come from these Shrutis though. This is the source. Whenever there's a conflict between the secondary scripture and the primary scripture, they always go back to the primary scripture. What is said over there. So whenever there's a conflict. So I was telling you about this body, how another rishi talked about it, which is, this terminology is very popular these days among the yoga teachers and yoga students. This body is called a food sheath. Food sheath, because we all know that even when we were little, or even in the womb of our mother, the food she ate made us bigger, And after we came out also, we took birth, with the food, this gross body has become the way we are right now. Food sheet. It's called Anume Kosh. They call it a Kosh. Kosh means a treasure. So these yogis, they said it's a treasure. Treasure given to us by whom? By God. Protect it, take care of it, respect it, use it properly. Don't abuse it. This food sheath also. They called it a temple. In Sanskrit, there's a saying, Deho Devalya Prokta, that this body is a temple. So, put the kind of a food in it which you will offer it to God. Pure food, sattvic food. So this food sheath, and then outside, mental sheath. Some people say it's outside, some people say it's inside. So it all depends how you want to look at it. There are some rishis, they said inside. Some say outside. Because mind does go outside also. But then mind is inside also. They called it a manome kosh. So anume kosh, manome kosh. What does mind do? Think. Flow of thoughts, the mind. Then they said another sheet, which is more pervasive than this. See, body is sitting over here. If I want to take it outside, it has to move from this room through that door to go outside. But mind, from here, it can go without anybody's knowledge. But then the another sheath, which is even more pervasive, which is called the intellectual sheath, or a vigyan me kosh. Intellect, that's even more pervasive. Then they talked about the bliss which you feel, anand me kosh. Bliss. It's not the soul. Sometimes people think that bliss means the soul. But this sheath is so pervasive that it can feel the bliss of God. But still it's part of the nature though. It is still over here. It's not the soul, but it's closer to soul. So these Upanishads, they explain this human existence with this kind of a terminology also. So this is all in the Upanishads. Whether you want to understand it as a chariot, whether understand like these treasures, but ultimately they say that goal of this human life is liberation. All the Upanishads declare the same thing. Liberation. Liberation from this bondage. Liberation from this suffering. Liberation from this attachment. No matter which Upanishad you study, no matter which guru you go to. And another thing they mention, that you don't have to die to get liberated. Because sometimes we have that misconception also. No. Liberation can be. There's several levels of liberation. If you can just stay away from the negativity, if you can keep this body healthy, if you can keep the atmosphere where you live cordial, you are liberated from that negativity. If you are not habitual or addicted to certain things which are bad for you, you are liberated. So all this wisdom, all this knowledge helps us to become liberated, freer and freer. And ultimately, the more free we feel, the more peaceful we feel. And as human beings, or not just the human beings, in fact, everybody in this creation wants to feel happy, peaceful, blissful. That is like a inner nature of us. We are moving towards, but we don't know where to find it though. We look for it at the wrong place. So these Upanishads, they direct us very clearly, very scientifically, again and again, that that's where you can get it. They give us the techniques. So there's a clear map also, not just a vague idea. So that's why those four sayings, when you look at it, that gives us the confidence that those disciples, they could do it, we can do it too. If we say Brahm is everywhere, Brahm is inside us, how come I don't feel it? How come I feel only the confusion and the misery and the conflict? So that's when we practice it. Okay.
Thank you. And please, if you've got questions, yeah, just wait for
questions.
The microphone and I will bring it to you, and so that we can record the question as well as the answer.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for the wonderful presentation, although I missed half of it. But I would like you to share with everyone here something from the Gatha Upanishad, which is perhaps one of my favorite parts from it, the conversation that Nachiketa has with Yama. And it's sort of like a test that Yama does to Nachiketa, that he asks for the secret of death, right? And what Nachiketa says to him, I mean, what Yama said to him, because he tests it really, really hard. And then he just tells what it is.
Yeah, because, see, Nachiketa, when he went to that Lord of Death, the Lord of Death wasn't there. He was away. And he had to wait for 3 days and three nights. So I don't know, where did you read it that it was a test? It was more like he had to wait, and Lord of Death didn't like it that he had to wait. He said, a Brahman, son of a Brahman, has come to our door and he had to wait, and nobody took care of him. So that's when he says, you have three boons. You can ask three boons. And the first boon he uses, he says, my father, who was very angry when I was talking to him, asking him where you are going to send me, can you give him some peace so that he can sleep at night? That is the indication that as human beings, we have to pay three debts actually we are supposed to pay as human beings. And one of the debt is a parental debt. Take care of our parents. Serve our parents they have given us this beautiful body. They are the Brahma of this, or the creator of this human body. So he uses one boon for that. The second boon he uses, he says, people perform a lot of rituals. He says, can you explain in detail that if they can perform certain rituals, and they can enjoy the heaven longer period of time. So he explains that what kind of a yajna people can do, what kind of a sacrifices they can make. And third boon, he wanted to know what happens after death. And Lord of Death says, I cannot, ask me about anything else. He says, I will give you a life which is like thousands of years. I'll give you hundreds of sons. I'll give you the wealth of this whole three worlds. But do not ask me about that. So there's a long conversation between those two. But ultimately, Nachiketa says, no, I don't want any of that. You promised me this boon, and I want that boon. I want to know what really happens to the soul after death. So it's a beautiful conversation. So if you ever get a chance, do study it. Yeah, looks like you have studied it. Katha Upanishad. This is a Katha Upanishad, yes. Katha means a story. Katha, story. So in the story form, all this wisdom has been passed down to us. So all those Upanishads, you can buy the Upanishads individually also. And there's a collection of the Upanishads also. So if you ever want, we have it at the ashram too. We study them every year. During summer, we study one of the Upanishads, definitely. So, okay, anybody else? Yes.
I think, did you mention which of the Upanishads the story is, the nine-year-old going to speak to the Lord of Death?
Katha Upanishad.
Pardon?
That is the Katha Upanishad, K-A-T-H-A.
Okay, has that been translated into English?
Yes.
Yes. It is on the list, sir. Okay.
Yeah, it is on the list.
I see, right. Okay.
You see that over there? Yeah, that has been translated by, in fact, several Swamis. You will see that. If you Google it, you will find out several translations of it.
Okay, another question. I was just thinking about this story, and is it said why the boy's father is so angry?
Because the boy was bothering him.
Oh, okay.
Boy was just kind of pestering him.
I understand that, yes. No, I understand it, yeah.
Yeah, that's all it says.
I just thought that was
funny. Yeah, no detail about it, but he just... See, the Upanishads, you will see that. The language of the Upanishad is very terse. It's not fully explained. So that's why we need to learn it from a teacher also. Some of the things which are not even said in there. Okay. Another handout which I forgot to mention, I have given it to you, which gives the little philosophy of the Vedas or the Upanishads. So in your leisure time, you can look at it. These arrows will tell you that if you go one way, you can get liberated. If you go the other way, you can just keep coming back again and again into this mortal world. Okay, because this is a reincarnation, so it's mentioned in the Upanishads quite a bit. See, karmic philosophy, reincarnation, and this God, soul, and the Prakriti, these are the topics of the Upanishads. So that's why I thought this, if you are interested in, you can get some help from it. Okay, so if you have any question on that, you can ask me.
We have one more question.
Sure, definitely.
Well, you mentioned that there were three debts that we have to pay as human beings.
Yes.
And you just, parental is one of them. What are the others?
Okay, thank you. In Sanskrit, they are called Pitri Rin. Rin means debt. There are some people who know Sanskrit over here. So that's a parental debt. The second one is Dev Rin. Dev word is used for these elemental forces out there. Earth, water, fire, air, and space. As human beings, we are not supposed to pollute them. Take care of them. Live in the harmony with them. So if we do that, we are paying our debt. Because we use them to live. So if we pollute them, we are not taking care of them. So just like these days we say that green earth and we want to conserve, okay, this earth. So that's a dev. So debt towards the devatas. See, the Sanskrit terminology, devata could mean God also. But then whenever we say devata, the God word is written with a small g. So there's an earth god, water god, fire god, air god, and the ether god or the space god. So don't pollute them. And the third debt is towards our rishis. It's called a rishi rin, debt to the rishis. Rishis are the one who wrote these scriptures. It's our duty to study them, to contemplate upon them, to bring all that wisdom, all that knowledge into our life. Okay? So three debts. Debts to the parents for this body. Debt to these godly elemental forces. They sustain our body, help us to sustain. Without water, we cannot live. And then ultimately, the knowledge is the one which is going to bring us closer to the divinity. And the knowledge has come from these rishis. Okay, whether we study these scriptures, whether we study Bible, Quran, does not matter. All those rishis, they're called rishis. They have given us the knowledge to uplift ourselves, to become one with the universe. Okay? Does that answer? All right. Because sometimes these small terms, Sanskrit terms, we need to elaborate these terms. Okay, thank you. Well,
question?
You had mentioned there are many translators of the Upanishads. Many different people are translating them to English. Do you have a favorite translator?
My Guruji. But he has translated from Sanskrit to Hindi. So so that won't be any help to you. That's basically what I study. I studied under his guidance, so learned from him. But there's, I can give me some time. I can email it to you. I have other books also which are written in English. So there are a lot of great scholars out there. They have translated. Swami Chinmayananda is one. And then Vivekananda Society. There are a lot of Swamis. They have done a great job also translating all these Upanishads. So, but if you really need to know specifically, I can do some homework for you.
Well, I may as well ask one question as well.
Okay.
Do we have any idea approximately when the oral tradition started to become a written tradition with regards to the Upanishads?
I have read somewhere that about 25,000 years ago, because in the paper form, it was only a few thousand years ago. Mm. But before that, they used to write on... the leaves.
Palm leaves.
Leaves. Mm. Because I have seen those
at
the ashram. Leaves, they will just burn the leaves and write on them. Or they will carve on the stones also. Mm. So to me, I think that's also a written. But compilation like this came a lot later, about 5,500 years ago, by that Ved Vyas. And in fact, there is a story behind that Rishi Ved also, Ved Vyas. His mother was a fisherwoman, and father was a Brahman, Rishi Parashar. So he had the daring of a fisherman and the discipline and the intellect of a Brahman. So that's why he could do something like that. I mean, you can imagine back then how many people must have gone against him that he's writing it. Why is he doing it? Because that kind of a change in society, you got to be very daring to do, right? So Vyas, Rishi Vyas.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Hirsch. How about a hand of appreciation?